here's a story from The World.
This week, we're taking a look at some big themes in U.S. defense and security with Lacey Healy at the PRX National Security Podcast, Things That Go Boom. Today, a biggie, nuclear weapons, a new class of nuclear warheads that's smaller than generations past. You could think of them as baby nuclear weapons, if that helps. They're changing how the U.S. and Russia approach nuclear arms control. Here's Lacey Healy.
Baby nukes go by lots of names. Low-yield nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear weapons, non-strategic nuclear weapons. And just like the name, what exactly constitutes a baby nuke is a little shaky. Throughout our nuclear history, we've tried to cram small nuclear warheads onto everything from short-range missiles to artillery shells, landmines, depth charges, torpedoes. One of these gadgets, the W-54, was literally engineered to fit in a duffel bag. The idea being that a soldier would put the bomb on the ground, set the timer, and run. Which left me wondering, how in the world did this become a thing?
Things are happening.
All right, things are happening. Okay, perfect. To get some context, I called up an expert from the arms control community.
My name is Matt Korda. I'm a research associate at the Federation of American Scientists. We track global nuclear forces across all 9 nuclear-armed countries.
And he took me back to the early days of the nuclear program.
The atomic age was born.
And what nuclear bomb technology used to be like.
So early atomic weapons like the ones dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they were around like 15 to 20 kilotons, which was enough to destroy the majority of a city, but the bombs themselves weighed about 10,000 pounds. Mm.
These bombs did what they were intended to do, but the thinking was that their size might limit the situations where they could be used. For example, if one found oneself with a need to confront the Soviet Union's much larger army on the battlefield, but, you know, not blow absolutely everyone away. So Matt says that after Hiroshima and Nagasaki during the Cold War, there was a push to develop bombs with bigger explosive power in smaller packages.
Newer nuclear weapons, which today we would now know as thermonuclear weapons, can reach these insanely high yields. And we're talking about hundreds of kilotons or even thousands of kilotons, which is almost 100 times the size of those early atomic weapons without actually increasing the weapon's mass. In fact, the bombs got smaller.
These thermonuclear weapons were capable of a much bigger blast, but physically, they were a lot smaller than what the U.S. dropped on Japan, which opened up a whole world of possibilities. This is also where we see the introduction of what we might consider modern-day baby nukes, because some of the thermonuclear weapons had another advantage that we still use today.
What if you don't actually want that ridiculously high yield? What if you decide on what their explosive power is at the moment that you launch them? You can turn to something called dial-a-yield, which it's also called variable yield, but dial-a-yield is a little more descriptive. And when you dial-a-yield, you have the ability to set the bomb's explosive power pretty much anywhere between under a kiloton to several hundred kilotons.
The U.S. has about 1,000 of these dial-a-yield baby nukes in its arsenal right now. But that whole suite of baby nukes are also of questionable utility, since improvements in air defense and radar technology make them tougher to deliver by air. By submarine, however, baby nukes stand a better chance at reaching their targets undeflected, which is exactly why, last year, the Trump administration deployed a brand new submarine-launched baby nuke, the W-76-2. It's a warhead with a yield of about 8 kilotons that can't actually be dialed up and down, but it doesn't need to be, because on Ohio-class subs, it rides shotgun along some other massively powerful strategic warheads, either of which can be loaded into the exact same missiles. So think of the warheads like Pez, and the missiles like your favorite Garfield Pez dispenser. Load up the missile with your Pez flavor of choice, cherry or grape, a baby nuke, or its way bigger brother. So instead of dial yields, which are flexible across a mid to low range of explosive power, this Pez dispenser system covers both extremes.
The proponents of the warhead describe it as this flexible option. It starts with this idea of something called escalate to de-escalate. In the final years of the Obama administration, there were a number of Western analysts who were convinced that Russia had formally adopted some kind of escalate to de-escalate posture with respect to nuclear weapons. They called for the development of this low-yield warhead for the United States' nuclear-armed submarines with the idea that this capability would counter this new Russian doctrine.
The thing about that, though, Matt says, is that escalate to de-escalate is not an especially useful term, or at least not a particularly fair one to put on Russia, because it's how most states react to threats on a regular basis. There are plenty of examples of countries rolling out and rattling a big fat saber, nuclear or no, to say, hey, we're serious. But beyond that, the evidence that Russia has adopted this policy is also fairly slim. In fact, they've denied it exists.
And so, you know, there are some folks who would say that could Russia be keeping this escalate to de-escalate policy a secret? And in theory, I would say, you know, sure, but it doesn't really make that much sense.
Deterrence is the art of producing in the mind of the enemy the fear to attack.
That's going to lead to a whole bunch of confusion and maybe the potential for catastrophic miscalculation,
yeah.
Right? So in my mind, it's actually in Russia's interests to communicate their posture very clearly. And at the very least, in public documents, they've been really consistent over the past few decades.
The idea of the U.S. having a small nuke ready for retaliatory action against Russia, it's hard to imagine that not spiraling out of control. Escalate to de-escalate, it just doesn't seem like a winning strategy. So I talked to Rose Gademoller.
I'm the Payne Distinguished Lecturer at the Freeman Spoley Institute, part of the Center on International Security and Cooperation at Stanford University.
I asked Rose why she thinks the U.S. is invested in building and deploying new baby nukes.
I think that's where you get the arguments that, well, the Russians have more capability because they have more different warhead designs, some of them lower yield, some of them higher yield. We need more equivalence or equality of those capabilities.
Meaning we need baby nukes because the Russians have them. There's one other reason that I wanted to talk to Rose for this episode.
The Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty that is called New START, I was the chief U.S. negotiator in 2009 and 2010.
That's the treaty that limits the number of deployed warheads the U.S. and Russia can have. But importantly, doesn't limit baby nukes, just warheads in general. One of Rose's most vivid memories of negotiating the treaty was toward the end of a round of negotiations.
We were trying, pressing to get finished. And the Russians lost their temper. They said, we're going back to Moscow. We want to take a break. They were on their way to the airport and the Icelandic volcano went off. And as they were, you know, it had been spewing ash for a couple of days. But as they were on the way to the airport, Geneva Airport announced that they were closing because of the ash cloud from the volcano.
Oh, my gosh.
They came back. We finished the work we had to do. I had to laugh.
Mother Nature was on the side of arms control negotiations.
Exactly. Mother Nature helped us out.
Thanks to Mother Nature and Rose, the treaty was signed by Obama in 2010, pushed through Senate ratification by then Vice President Joe Biden, and just recently, in January 2021, right before it was set to expire, Biden and Vladimir Putin signed on for a 5-year extension, which means we have 5 years to negotiate a follow-on. And there's a chance, even if it's a small one, that that follow-on could include baby nukes. What does it actually look like to get back to the table and talk about some of these things and begin to put these limits in place?
Well, I think we've already seen the Biden administration making a beginning by reaching out very, very quickly to the Kremlin.
Rose says that the U.S. has wanted future talks to go beyond current caps to include specific warheads for some time. And it seems like a promising sign that late in 2020, the Trump administration was able to secure an agreement in principle from Putin to a freeze on warhead production.
And so we'll see how the Russians react. Their president was willing in principle to do it, but then the devil's in the details, as always. And the details have to do with monitoring and verification in very sensitive storage facilities and very sensitive facilities where warheads are handled. So it's going to be tough. We have the same sensitivities.
And she says in the meantime, basically, we have to keep the weapons we have up to date, warheads included. But does it really make sense to build newish weapons like the W-76-2 based on a desire to keep up with the Joneses?
Why not? Everyone else is doing it.
Rose says that reasoning is flawed. Deeply flawed.
You know, nuclear attack is something that everybody seeks to avoid. These arguments come down to whether a country is incorporating nuclear weapons and nuclear warheads into a warfighting strategy or not. And that's what the argument is by some experts who say that's exactly what the Russians do. We need to have more equivalence. Mm-hmm. We need to be thinking more in terms of usability of warheads, yeah, nuclear warfighting. And I just don't agree we need to go there.
In other words, it's one thing to want to maintain a robust enough nuclear arsenal that it serves as a deterrent, while at the same time you negotiate treaties with other nuclear-armed nations to de-weaponize. And it's another thing to start stockpiling weapons because you think you might want to launch them. But maybe the role of baby nukes isn't so much pushing us toward a new posture as much as it's revealing one that's been here for a while.
It kind of implies that using this weapon might be able to preempt some kind of Russian move or to de-escalate a crisis on terms favorable to the United States. But there's not that much evidence to suggest that that kind of thinking is dominant in Russian nuclear culture. But it does exist in some form in U.S. nuclear culture. And in fact, I would say a lot of the U.S. arsenal has historically and currently been postured for nuclear warfighting. The United States nuclear posture currently has a lot of weapons in it, which trend towards using early in a conflict and are designed specifically to be used before they are destroyed. And so now, as a result, we have this new weapon, the low-yield warhead for the nuclear submarines, that I would say probably creates more problems than it solves.
Paired with a posture that's organized around actually using these weapons, baby nukes are especially dangerous. Despite their smaller size, and in fact, because they're smaller, some analysts think they lower the threshold for entry into nuclear war enough that it starts to seem like not such a crazy idea. It's just 8 kilotons, after all. What's the harm?
I don't know. I worry sometimes about the idea of branding it as this low-yield thing. If we're talking about a 15-kiloton blast that destroyed Hiroshima, 8 kilotons is still, like, very significant. So in terms of making a more usable weapon, it constitutes a potentially somewhat tempting option for a president to reach toward in a crisis.
And then beyond that, there's an extra challenge that comes along with the W-76 too, which is what happens once it's launched.
I guess I would suggest that, you know, once the first nuclear weapon goes flying, even if it is a low-yield nuclear weapon, all bets are off, right? Because how would Russia know that this isn't the precursor to some kind of massive attack?
Some experts have argued that early warning systems can't discriminate between a baby nuke and a regular-sized nuke on a submarine-launched missile, and that if Russia sees a missile, it's not going to wait to see which flavor of warhead is inside. If the U.S. were to actually use the W-76-2, Russia would be forced to react as if it had just launched a full-scale nuclear attack. Meaning that these weapons are so risky, it's hard to imagine us choosing to use them at all.
That's Lacey Healy from the PRX National Security Podcast, Things That Go Boom. This story was produced by Emily Vaughn and Robin Wise. Tomorrow in our series, the long trail of U.S. military engagements that started after 9/11.